we're going to skip you then, because we are still ahead of schedule, and call item X, thank you, the family law final report of the Elkins Family Law Implementation Task Force action item, and we welcome Justice Lori Zelon, chair of that task force, to the podium. This is X.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Thank you for allowing me to come here. It's kind of a bittersweet day for me. We've been at this for a while. And I want to spend just a few minutes with you telling you where we've been, where we are, and where we're going with Elkins. I want to first say what an honor it has been to be entrusted with this project. Family law touches more of the users of our courts than almost anything else. And it's also an area where the users of our courts increasingly find themselves alone in court. And so working to make the system work for them has been a privilege. And along the way, I was thrilled to have working with me first 39 other lawyers, judges, and administrators, and then 19 others as we moved into the implementation phase. All of them were very talented and very dedicated. A little bit concerned at the beginning that we had bitten off way more than we could possibly chew, but happy at the end with what we digested. The good news for the day, the best news for the day, is that the implementation committee has accomplished most of recommendations of the report. That is, they are in place. The courts are implementing them. Education is going forward. This is not to say that work in those areas will cease, because there is ongoing education, ongoing thought, and hopefully, if the legislature keeps its promise, ongoing innovation in family law with funding to do pilot projects and test two methods. So let's look back for a minute at where we started. We've been at this almost 6 years, starting with the very simple premise that the family law courts should serve the needs of California's wives, husbands, and children, and that they were entitled to due process when they came to court. Our family law judges and staff have been carrying an enormous load for many years, and they have been significantly under-resourced and continue to be significantly under-resourced. The litigants, a significant majority of whom have no lawyers, face confusing procedures, difficulty in getting time in court, and very long delays. They were frustrated, they were unhappy, and so were the judges. This is an assignment in which a majority of California litigants form their impressions of the courts, and in which too many view it as unfavored and even a punitive assignment. And that's just backwards. That's where we need our best and our brightest to meet the needs of the families. So 2 years into our happy task to renovate California's family law, the downturn began, and the needs got bigger and the resources got smaller. So we focused on looking for common sense solutions to streamline the process, to make it easier to understand, and mostly to make it more efficient. We sought to respond to the issues the stakeholders had raised with us, to look at why the courts had been placed in the position of wasting time because their trials were fragmented, because there were so many continuances, and because people came to court unready to proceed. We sought to identify changes that don't cost money, but do save time, and do decrease workload so that the courts could resource the leverage the resources that they had for family law. And we looked to see where the interests of the courts and the public were the same, and operated on the theory, one, if we could make the process better for the litigants, it would make it better for the courts. And two, if the process were better for unrepresented litigants, it would be better for those with lawyers as well. As I said, many of the recommendations have now been adopted, and the courts have, with open arms, embraced the changes. And some of them represent huge steps towards the goal of really changing family law. One of them is case flow management. We're a little early, and I don't know if our video is queued up. Is anybody?
Yes. Yes. Signal from the booth.
Okay. So Judge Nystrom Geist could not be with us today, but she said some comments that I'd like to share with you on the case management issue.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to talk to you today. I so appreciate the opportunity to address the council and to talk a little bit about case management in family law and what it has meant to me to be a part of it. You know, I have a unique perspective of case management in family law. I'm not sure if anybody else has had exactly these experiences. My first exposure to case management in family law was as a member of the Elkins Task Force. The idea actually arose from Elkins. As Elkins finished and we began the Elkins Implementation Task Force, I am also serving the role as co-chair of the Family and Juvenile Advisory Committee to the Judicial Council. So wearing those two hats, we started working on the Rule of Court, which the council eventually approved and is now Rule of Court 5.83. The third hat I wear is as supervising family law judge in Fresno, which means it was my responsibility to head the team. I certainly did not do the work all by myself, but to head the team as we tried to find a way to make Rule of Court 5.83 a reality in our county. And sadly, that hit right as our resources were greatly reduced. As I think most of you know, family law has never been adequately resourced, nor have the courts. And so to take our already dwindling resources and to make them even smaller at a time when a great burden is placed on the family court, it was difficult to deal with. Part of how we approached it in Fresno was to ask for help. We have gotten unbelievable support from the Center for Families, Children, and the Courts. A team came out. They helped us. They helped us draft our rule. They helped us with ideas. Particularly helpful has been Deborah Chase, because Deborah is very in tune with case management. She has the benefit of 58 counties experience. And everyone, Julia Weber, Deborah Chase, Bonnie Huff, Deanna Piazza, they have all offered us so many important views of a statewide level that helped us in our own county in Fresno. The fourth hat that I get to wear regarding case management is as the judge who actually does it. The calendar is amazing. Of the four different hats I've been able to wear and the four different perspectives I've had of case management, my favorite is in the courtroom. Because what I see in the courtroom is the same thing that family law judges know everywhere. These are mostly nice people. These are mostly people who would do the work if they just knew how. I don't think I've asked anybody, would you like to finish your case today, and have them tell me no. People are eager to do the work. It's a calendar that is very valuable to the attorneys because it helps them keep their cases on track. It is probably more valuable to the self-represented. Different people have different statistics. For the most part, we think it runs about 80% self-represented in family law. These are people who don't know what they're doing, their lives are falling apart, and they have no idea how to make it better. It is a great feeling as the judge who is really there on the ground level to look at them and say, how can we help you today? We are here to help you finish your case. I thank you again for the opportunity. Case management is working so, so well from each of the perspectives I've had the privilege to have. Thank you again.
Judge Nystrom-Geist, and I'm not telling a story out of school, was one of the people who saw early on the great value of case management. Just to remind you, family law judges were not allowed to do case management unless the parties agreed. And so it was the only area in the courts where the judge really couldn't manage the case. And she saw the importance of it, and she was worried because she was actually on the ground trying to run a court, and she said, I don't know if I can do it. I know it's a good idea, but I don't know if I can do it. And with the help that she got, which is just the best example of the branch working together to help itself and to help the people it serves, she got it done. And she's now the biggest cheerleader for case management in the state, which is why I wanted you to have an opportunity to hear from her today. Another area that I really want to talk about that I think is very significant is live testimony. The Elkins case arose because Mr. Elkins came to court and he couldn't present his case because the court rule said everything had to be presented by declaration ahead of time. And he was representing himself and he didn't know how to do it and he didn't know he had to do it. And so he wasn't heard. And that was the genesis of how all of this started. So the opportunity for people to come to court, to testify, to tell their story to the court, and to have the court consider what they have to say before it makes a ruling on their resources and their housing, and most importantly, their children, is a critical value for our democracy and for our courts. And we are so pleased that the legislature adopted our recommendation and that the council adopted the rules of court to make it possible to allow people to come to court and to be heard directly in family law. For the future, looking forward, data is going to be critical. I've heard enough of your discussion this morning, just enough to know that you already know that data is what we need. We need to be able to justify what we're asking for, to see what's working, to make it more efficient, and to see what the true impact of change is on workload. Dina Piazza on the staff, and she just walked in, timing is everything, has been working on dashboard measures to allow courts to see what is going on, and has been working with the Office of Court Research to measure the workload and to measure effective processes and outcomes. This is critical going forward. It's what's going to make the difference in helping courts allocate their resources and helping us all advocate for sufficient resources for the court to be able to ensure the legislature that the resources are being used properly and for the benefit of the litigants. This is part of the work that we're recommending go forward to the Access and Fairness Advisory Committee and to the Family and Juvenile Committee. Those are the two committees that are best placed to take the recommendations that have not yet been completed, to take the ongoing work and to look to the future. And trust me, I am not going to go through the detail of which of the 200 recommendations goes where. It's in the report, and I hope that you will agree with us that those committees are best suited to take on the work. They have both agreed to take on that work, and Judge Stout is here. Judge Nystrom-Grice has agreed. I have the opportunity to agree with myself as Chair of Access and Fairness. And so I am confident that that work will go forward. But the most important and critical unfinished work is the unfinished business of how we as a court system view family law and how we meet the needs of the families that come to us for help. As I said earlier, it's a priority area for litigants, and yet too often you hear it discussed as a disfavored assignment. We talked a lot in the report about changing the conversation, about raising the status of family law, about making sure that everyone understands what a great assignment it is because of the work that the judges there get to do. And in looking at how to reallocate that work, it occurred to those of us on the committee that it was the council and the PJs who we were going to have to ask to take on that work. The PJs because they make the assignments on the ground, and the council because the council provides the leadership to the rest of the branch to which we all look for help and guidance. So it is the council and the PJs who I think will make the greatest difference. To look at the priority we give in allocating resources for education, to look at the priority for assignments, to find ways to make the judges who take on family law assignments feel truly valued by their courts, and appreciated and honored by their peers, and to allocate resources to follow the workload so that our family law judges are not the only judges leaving the parking lot late at night with boxes of documents in their cars to go home and do the work to get ready for the next day. And resources in family law actually go well beyond the bench officers. It includes family law services. It includes mediation services, which have been cut back in the downturn in many courts. It includes information for litigants, and it very much includes self-help. Part of what Judge Nystrom-Geist wanted to talk about was the fact that the reason her case management calendar works as well as it does is because she works with the self-help center. And they come in and work with the litigants as they're coming and as they're going to help them get ready for the hearing they have and to get ready for the next steps in the process. That's critical, and we must continue to support that. So I will close, although I'm happy to take questions, by telling you again how grateful I am to have been offered the opportunity to have a hand in this effort. I was a nerd. You're not surprised. I was a real nerd in high school. Probably still am. And I was in the band. And I played an instrument. And it always occurred to me that I was home practicing every day. And I was out there on the field every day practicing the marching. And there was one guy who never had a practice. That was the guy at the front with the baton. He got all the credit. He looked great. He marched at the front of the band. And he wasn't practicing every day. So I always wanted to be the guy out in front. So this was my opportunity to be the person in front. And I am grateful for that as a former band nerd. But more importantly and more seriously, I got to work with truly talented and dedicated people who made this go. Both all of the members of the task forces and the extraordinary staff who supported this work. And some of them are here today, and I would like them to stand so you can see some of the people who made this work happen. And Diane Nunn, the head of CFCC, who's not standing.
Can you, Justice Ely, could you actually keep them standing? And so we applauded, but we'd like to hear their names also for our record.
Julia Weber, Deborah Chase. Dina Feroli now. I actually went through my own divorce process.
Gabriel Selden also worked on it, and of course Bonnie Huff, who you've seen many times, who is now on an airplane going to the Galapagos. I don't know how she could pass up being here today, but she's going to the Galapagos. Anyway, for those who are not here, I know that they appreciate the gratitude of this council, and they certainly know the gratitude for me. And finally, I want to thank the council, not only for starting and supporting this effort over these six long years. And I was reminded yesterday that Chief Justice George, the former chief, used to call people out in the hall and say, I've got a project for you. It'll take 3 years. That's what he told me, too. But it was a privilege to do it. But I really finally want to thank the council for the commitment to the work. And the commitment to make it go forward and to complete it for the benefit of those who come to court every day in California. So thank you.
Thank you, Justice Zelon. We have some hands raised. Justice Miller, Justice Baxter.
Thank you. Chief, I don't have any questions because, as always, you're thorough and do just an excellent job. But I want to commend you and your committee, but especially you for really what is incredibly important work and historic, and how well you have accomplished it. And like yesterday at our awards ceremony, you sometimes forget how much the work touches other people and how important it is and how significant it is. And so you should be commended for that, because it does touch many millions of people, and you've done a great job in that regard. And I want to assure you, the council will not let it linger in any way. We've started conversations already. Judge Ellsworth has been a part of those, Judge Dean Stout, and we will continue those, and we will make sure there's a process and all of this work is assigned out and that those tasks are completed and new ones begin the process and are accomplished. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Justice Baxter?
Well, I join in the commendation. But I also want to provide a little bit of background to, because I think this, the success of this task force really illustrates how the council can be successful on a variety of issues. In the Elkins case, as has been noted, there was, you know, the briefing in Elkins didn't mention anything about a task force or anything of that sort. It involved, you know, a litigant. And I'll never forget, and I'm not going to tell stories out of school, but I will say that at the post-argument conference following the argument in Elkins, the members of the court, that's when the issue of to solve this problem, we need more than a judgment of the court in Elkins. There's a need for additional work to be done. And as a result, the Chief Justice's opinion, as I recall, actually created an Elkins task force. And, of course, now it went to the council, and we've seen exactly what the success of the entire process. So I say that in this case, the spark came from the court itself. In other instances, the spark can come from an educational meeting where an issue is brought before the council. The spark may come from a liaison meeting held in the chief's office. The spark may come from just simply a suggestion that any member of the council might make. So in addition to commending Justice Elon and everyone involved in this particular task force, I just want to highlight that this is a great example of how a major project can be started and completed. Thank you.
Thank you, Justice Baxter. Commissioner Alexander.
I was lucky enough to be on both of these task force, and there's a bunch of people that need to be thanked. Justice Zeelan was absolutely wonderful. Though family law was not her area of expertise, she had the vision to say we needed to look at what the litigants need, and what the litigants need is going to back up to say what the court needs and what the actual people working in the court need. So she focused on what were needed by those people coming to the court, and it was a brilliant way to look at it. I think we also need to thank the Assembly Judiciary Committee. They were great in having one of their members. Drew was on our task force, and once we had our 200 recommendations, they went through those and picked out the ones that were not going to cost money but needed legislation, and immediately jumped in, proposed the legislation, and got it passed, which gave us a way to run with the recommendations. The local courts were absolutely wonderful in providing subject matter experts. Hours of time were provided by volunteers from staff from local courts to be able to devise methods of how to implement these recommendations. And an example is we did a judgment checklist that I don't know how many meetings there were of staff from different courts to figure out everybody was doing it differently. How can we do it the same? What is actually needed and what's the best practice? As Justice Zeelan has said, Diane Nunn and her staff at CFCC have worked tirelessly and to implement over, 70 to 80% of 200 recommendations in a 3-year period that require rules, forms, and legislation is miraculous. There was pushback, I remember, from RuPro about how family law was putting in too many suggestions and too many forms and too many rules, and it was overwhelming everybody, but it needed to be done, and it got done, and everybody worked together to do that. The fact that almost all of them were passed by consent says something for how much everybody worked on them, worked out all the glitches, attended to all the public comment, and were able to get those through. And the task force members themselves were tireless. They have meetings once or twice. They divide into 4 groups. Each of those groups met once a week by conference call, generally at 4:30 on their own time, to work out the details, to do planning, to make policy. It was just an unbelievable working group of people that were very dedicated. And now it primarily is moving to the local courts, where the implementation has to be done at a local level. And some of the members, some of the things that haven't been done, are still working on those things. They've decided to do them as local pilots. Hopefully those can be successful and other courts can benefit from them. But many of the task force members are not ending. In fact, the last task force meeting was after the task force ended, was the last conference call, was even after technically the task force is finished. So I hope the local level picks it up. I hope the PJs pay attention and listen to what the recommendations are and work, at the same effort level that the task force did to get them implemented at the local level.
Thank you, Commissioner Alexander. Judge Stout?
Thank you, Chief. I just want to join in the compliments and praise that's so well deserved by Justice Elon and members of the task force, and of course the tireless efforts of AOC staff, which truly always do a remarkable job, and this is just a prime example. I do want to say that Justice Elon was more than just out front with the baton of the band. She was a tremendous leader with great eloquence and grace and poise, but she was also in the trenches and making this happen. And she was there marching in the band, and it's just a tremendous achievement. And I also really want to echo Justice Elon's comments about prioritizing our limited resources, the need for allocation of resources to, I'll add, juvenile court as well as the family court. Well, I have that opportunity, but it is so critical, and I want to join and echo those comments. I am confident, as former co-chair of FAMJU committee and dialogue with Judge Nystrom-Geist and now Judge Borak from Sacramento, who succeeded me, they are well prepared and up to the task of taking on the responsibility of completing the remaining implementation tasks as recommended by Justice Elon. At the appropriate time, I'd be honored to move adoption and of the recommendations.
McCabe, second.
Thank you. Judge Stout moves, Judge McCabe seconds, as well as Judge Ellsworth. I just wanted to add in the comments made today, I think the work of the task force, the work of the implementation task force as well, is a spectacular example of volunteerism in the branch by leaders at the branch level, at the bench level, at the attorney level, at the AOC level, in terms of really giving selflessly for procedural fairness and access, and it's a legacy to the public, to families and children. And as Justice Miller has already indicated, the work will carry on, and there will be continuing reassessments to improve the work and the foundation that these task force have created. I especially appreciated, I think, Commissioner Alexander, too, her addition to your history, Justice Elon, because when you summarize it that way, it just sounds so simple. But the fact that it took years, and as you mentioned what you've done, all of us here who've worked on some aspect of a task force or an advisory committee knows that it's arduous work, but it's work dedicated to the public good. So thank you very much.
Thank you. I must say, to be fair, when we started the task force and had our first meeting, we had it over pizza, I think, and all talked about what we wanted to accomplish. And I warned people that I was very mean. A very strict taskmaster. And at one point during the process, I did suggest that we all go out and run a 10K together. That was the only time they voted me down. It was a tremendous opportunity. I think all of I can speak for everyone who was involved in this effort in saying we're all willing to continue to work with the council in whatever way we can to make this effort go forward. And I thank you again.
Thank you, Justice Zeeland. Judge Walsh.
Chief, if I may, the invitation, as I heard it, is would the PJs listen? I'm sure they will. And I think since some of this is also about operations, perhaps SEAC will join me and we could work on a presentation at one of our meetings coming up and talk to the PJs. And I know they'll be receptive, not only because they want to do the right thing, but most of them, like me, have been in family court, took those buckets home late at night, were bleary-eyed, a little envious of those empty parking stalls at 5 p.m. of our college, and know that expanding resources for family is important. We've suffered it as the judicial office, but we've also seen being on the family law bench. There is no decision I ever made as a Superior Court judge that's more important than the decisions I made in family law every day. Nothing more important. So we as a branch owe it all of our attention. We as PJs owe it all of our attention. We'll follow up on it.
Thank you, Judge Walls.
Thank you.
Thank you, Justice Elon. All in favor of the recommendations, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Recommendations matter carry. Thank you again. Thank you very much. Thank you.